It is time for a whole new week of broadcasting all about the Southeast. I'm John Rawl, and this is The Y'all Show, where we, for the next couple of hours, discuss all things going on across the 16 southern states. And a reminder of what those states are: Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maryland, Mississippi, Missouri, North Carolina, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Virginia, and West Virginia. Those 16 states, we got you scattered, smothered, and as they say, a Waffle House, covered. We got it covered from a news standpoint. We got it covered from a sports standpoint. We got all the cultural stuff covered. We got the political stuff covered. We try to do a little bit of everything right here on the Y'all Show. We truly do scatter, smother, and cover just about every single thing we possibly can here on the show that shakes the Southland. Gonna have a great time today. Glad that you could take time out of your very busy day to join us here on the Y'all Show. We've got news headlines from across the Southeast, including some Trump news. Oh, we got to get our daily dose of Trump news. Plus, we'll let you know how this case out of Mississippi exploded over the weekend, where six former law enforcement officers are expected to plead guilty to state charges today for torturing two black men in an assault. Now, this got just a little bit of attention earlier in the year. I'm actually surprised it hasn't carried on to be like the number one news story every day since that time. But it did pop up over the weekend, and we'll bring you a story out of Brandon, Mississippi, in our news headlines today. Speaking of racist-type goings-on over the weekend, a swastika spray-painted on a sign entering the Trump International Golf Club in West Palm Beach, Florida. Not exactly the best of news, but we'll tell you both of those stories. And speaking of the guy that owns Trump International, Trump, at an Alabama fundraiser this weekend, says he needs just one more indictment to close out this election. Yeah, that's what he said. Another billionaire from the South in the news, and he's bought a $68 million mansion in Florida. Jeff Bezos, spending some of that good old Amazon money. He's bought a home in the Indian Creek area in Miami. We'll let you know more about this $68 million property that he has purchased. Plus, we'll let you know some other news out of Bezos' native Texas. Barrels of drinking water from migrants have disappeared. We'll explain what happened there. Also from Tennessee, a former state senator has been sentenced to 21 months due to a campaign finance violation. Going off to jail, Brian Kelsey. We'll give you the information about that in our headlines from across the Southeast today. Plus, how a bad day out trying to get some fish inspired one person to become one heck of a cook, as this person has now won a cook-off, Chef Brody Olive, winning the 2023 Great American Seafood Cook-Off, and it all happened because of a bad day fishing. See, sometimes really good things can happen when you have a bad day out there trying to reel in the big one. We'll give you that as part of our headlines across the Southeast today. Those would be our news headlines that we'll cover on today's Y'all Show. Want to also let you know, coming up on today's Y'all Show, we've got our sports update, and I'm going to have a fair amount of coverage of the first of the playoff events that happened over the weekend on the PGA Tour, as the golfers were all in Memphis. The top 70 golfers qualified for the FedEx St. Jude Championship, and over the weekend that was held on that course east of Memphis, and yours truly had a chance to go check out the final round Sunday. That is, until the daggum lightning delay happened and I conveniently escaped the golf course. But Lucas Glover ended up capturing this event. The South Carolina native and Clemson University alumnus won his second consecutive golf tournament. And like when I say consecutive, he won last week, and now he won this past weekend. 2 weeks in a row, a winner on the PGA Tour. And that doesn't happen too often. And as a result of his win Sunday in Memphis, he picked up a nearly $3.5 million check. A pretty good payday for the 40-something-year-old Greenville SC native, Lucas Glover. We'll tell you about the sights and sounds of the FedEx St. Jude Championship as a part of our sports coverage. Plus, this weekend we had plenty of preseason football from the NFL that went down, and we'll give you some thoughts on that. Some players looking pretty good out there, and some just did not do very well, to put it mildly. So we'll give you an update on all that as part of our Southern Sports Report for hour number one. Here in this opening hour of the Y'all Show, we've got hashtag Hullabaloo. And as part of our coverage of that today, we're going to let you know all about some pictures that have come in from the Tennessee Mountains. This would be, I think, in East Tennessee, where a person has sent in some photos. A person traveling from another country sent those in. So we'll give them some photographic love here on the first hour of the Y'all Show. Plus, it's all about canats. Yes, someone has sent something in about gnats, and this one's really been bugging me. So we'll have some fun talking about gnats in the South here in our opening hour of the Y'all Show. Hour number two today, in addition to headlines that we'll be covering, we've got the Southern History Spotlight for today, and I'm going to let y'all know all about the Second Seminole War as it started way back when on this date, and I'm going to let you know the environs of what created the Second Seminole War back in the 18th century. That's going to be coming up. Plus, we've got some birthdays to tell you about. Happy birthday, Steve Martin, the native Texan, with a big birthday today, the comedian slash banjo picker. Got a birthday today. Plus, how about Philippines-born, Florida-loved, but American-loved, Heisman Trophy-winning quarterback Tim Tebow, as he turns, I think, 36 years old today. Happy birthday, Mr. Tebow. All that is part of our Southern history. We'll tell you about all of those fellows, a little bit more about their background, in that spotlight coming up in hour number two. We also have coming up in the second hour of our program, we've got our Southern recipe of the day, and it's going to be a very tasty recipe to share with you. It comes to us from the website tasteofhome.com, and it is a roast. Let me make sure I get this right. A root beer pulled pork recipe. So imagine pulled pork combined with root beer. I bet you that sounds and tastes delicious. Yes. Well, guess what? We'll walk through that recipe in our second hour of today's Y'all Show. Our final hour today, MAGA Megan is going to be back here with us, and we're going to have Megan Headwall come on and talk about some alarming but welcome news if you're a Democrat, as a U.S. House member has gone on media a couple times in the last few days and has been very critical of a Joe Biden 2024 run for president. And I'm going to let you hear some of that audio coming from Minnesota Congressman Dean Phillips. And we're going to get Megan to weigh in on how brave or crazy, you might want to say, Dean Phillips was to get out here and start letting Democrats know that we need to seriously have other people lining up to be president, because Joe Biden may not make it. And Joe Biden may not make it for a number of reasons. We'll play that audio. We'll get Megan Headwall's take on a Democrat rising to the occasion and saying, wait a minute, we need some help on this side of the aisle when it comes to running for president in 2024. All that is coming up in our final hour. Plus, we'll have more Southern sports. We'll have a feature today all about the Virginia Tech Hokies, as we'll be in Blacksburg on our virtual tour of the Southeast, getting you ready for the start of college football 2023. And we'll let you hear some audio from Brent Pry, the head coach of the Hokies, and more about the lunch pail. What is that all about? Well, that is a great tradition there for the Virginia Tech Hokies, and we'll give you that information, plus walk through the 2023 schedule for the Gobblers out of Blacksburg, Virginia, and the Atlantic Coast Conference. All that today on the Y'all Show. And if you want to get involved with y'all, we would love to hear from you. We've got an email address, mailmail@yall.com. That's one way to get in touch with us here. And then we also have our text line that is open 24 hours a day, 615-208-4184. We'd love to get your feedback and let you be a part of what we call the South's show. We are y'all. Now, picking up our headlines from across the Southeast today, 6 former Mississippi law officers out of Brandon, Mississippi. I think that is Rankin County is where this is. 6 officers there expected to plead guilty to state charges today for torturing 2 black men in a racist assault after recently admitting their guilt in a connected federal civil rights case. The officers, all of whom are white, nicknamed themselves the Goon Squad because of their willingness to use excessive force and cover it up, including the attack that ended with a victim shot in the mouth. In January, these 6 officers entered a house without a warrant and handcuffed and assaulted the 2 men with stun guns, a sex toy, and other objects. And then the officers mocked them with racial slurs throughout the 90-minute torture session. This is a very, very bizarre case. And again, this got just a little tiny bit of coverage earlier in the year. And I don't know how this hasn't either been the biggest story in the land, or is there really something else going on behind the scenes that has kind of muted the coverage of this story? The officers today expected to plead guilty to state charges in Mississippi, including home invasion, obstruction of justice, and conspiracy to hinder prosecution, as well as aggravated assault for the officer who pulled the trigger. That's right. There was a trigger pulled, and one of those victims was shot in the mouth. Man, the 5 men are former Rankin County Sheriff's deputies in Mississippi, and also a member of the City of Richland, Mississippi police officer also involved in that. So you got, I guess it would be 5 Rankin County Sheriff's deputies and a Richland, Mississippi police officer. One of those men admitted he shoved a gun into the victim's mouth and pulled the trigger in a mock execution that went awry. Yikes, yikes, yikes. The 2 victims, Michael Corey Jenkins and Eddie Terrell Parker, were targeted because a white neighbor complained that 2 black men were staying at the home with a white woman, according to court documents. A disturbing story that will obviously throughout the week, as they are in the pleading portion of this, we'll find out more information, but luckily, no one was killed. That's good. But again, the total ends up being 6 officers out of the central Mississippi area, most of which are Rankin County Sheriff's deputies, expected to plead guilty to Mississippi's state charges for this racist assault on 2 men earlier in 2023. More racism-related stories today. A swastika was spray-painted over a sign that welcome guests to Trump International Golf Club in West Palm Beach. A tarp now covers the name Trump, and crews have been painting over the hate symbol. The Trump organization has not quite responded to a request for a comment. There are no reports of who may have spray-painted the symbol, but again, this is in the area of Mar-a-Lago. Basically, Mar-a-Lago is on Palm Beach, and then inland from there, on the other side of the international waterway, the coastal international, what is it? It might be international coastal waterway. On the other side of that, over in what would be called West Palm Beach, Trump has this international golf club that he goes over and plays golf all the time. And that's where the swastika was painted in the last few days. And a tarp now covering up the name Trump. Trump definitely does not want his name covered up for any reason, but no telling who could have done such a terrible thing there in that portion of Florida. Speaking of the guy that owns that golf club, Donald Trump was in Montgomery, Alabama over the weekend and at a Republican Party dinner in the Yellowhammer State. Trump, right off of his 3rd appearance in court in the last few days as a criminal defendant, he had a defiant speech Friday, and he insulted prosecutors and declared that the charges that he faces are only helping his effort to win the presidency in 2024. A quote from Trump at this rally in Alabama: "Anytime they file an indictment, we go way up in the polls. We need one more indictment to close out this election. One more indictment, and this election is closed out. Nobody even has a chance." And he, of course, has pleaded not guilty to all of these various indictments, including Thursday, the president pleaded not guilty to crimes related to his efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 election loss. And he's expected this week to possibly be indicted in Fulton County, Georgia. But there in that portion of Alabama over the weekend, a defiant Trump on stage, and in some ways making a mockery out of all of these indictments. There are quite a few. This would be, if Fonnie Willis comes through in the next few days, a fourth indictment. And that is believed to be happening any day now, as that indictment has to do with the effort by Trump and his allies to overturn the election results in the state of Georgia in 2020. Now, Senator Tommy Tuberville, who was the person that introduced Donald Trump to that dinner in Alabama Friday night, and he's right now waging an unprecedented campaign to change Pentagon abortion policy by holding up hundreds of military nominations and promotions. Tuberville, up there on stage, said that Trump had had a tough week, but we need to stand behind him. He needs encouragement. They're after him. They're after you, is what Trump would say, too. When they're after him, they're after you. But Trump not holding back. Ron DeSantis also was in Alabama in recent days. He's been making a play for the Super Tuesdays states. That would be like Alabama and Mississippi, and maybe even Georgia's part of Super Tuesday in the South. But he's out campaigning and more. Everybody trying to make their appearances across the Southeast right now. You might see Jeff Bezos making an appearance or two in the state of Florida more often, as he's going to be buying a $68 million waterfront mansion in Indian Creek. That is in the Miami area. This home, if you want to pull it up on Google Maps, at 11 Indian Creek Island Road in Florida. And it is on an exclusive man-made barrier island known as the Billionaire Bunker. And now Jeff Bezos will be neighbors to Tom Brady and Ivanka Trump. They're some of the celebrities that live on Billionaire Bunker. The mansion sold June 29th for $68 million. It was built in 1965 and it is over 9,000 square feet. It's got 3 bedrooms and 3 bathrooms. You got to be kidding me. 3-bedroom, 3-bathroom home. And it'll set you back $68 million? Man, talk about the Biden inflation. Yeah, that's a lot. Now, some of the other amenities include a backyard pool, tennis courts, and a golf course. Hey, now we're talking. But that's not necessarily your exclusive golf course. I think, Jeff, you probably would have been a little bit more financially off, better off, if you'd have bought anywhere else but Billionaire Bunker in South Florida. $68 million, shoot, that'd buy you about any just about any county in most of Central Florida, North Florida, and heck, other portions of the South. It must be nice to have that kind of disposable income. Now, Jeff Bezos grew up west of San Antonio and in that portion of Texas because of the tremendous heat waves that we've seen across the last couple of weeks and really now stretching into a couple of months in Texas, at least. Barrels of life-saving water have been put out by human rights groups to help migrants coming through the area on foot. And now some of these barrels of water have been taken away. They've vanished. The barrels are labeled with the word AGUA, which is Spanish for water, painted in white capital letters and standing about 55 gallon drums are about waist high for most people, and they really stand out against the scrub and grass area of that portion of Texas. But they've been taken away and not really sure. An investigator with the Jim Hogg County Sheriff's Office is looking into it, and no one's really sure how in the world these big old 55-gallon containers of water, and they've gone missing. which I know can be a very, very important thing when these areas of Texas are getting 110 degree temperatures. Now, there's a group called No More Deaths, and several years ago, this group released video of Border Patrol agents kicking over and pouring water out of gallon jugs left for people in the desert. So are there some issues with Border Patrol not necessarily wanting to give water to the migrants? It is a very complicated story with people coming into this country illegally, and I know you feel for them. You don't want them to die, but you also don't want them running around all over people's property and tearing up things and causing a lot of problems, including mules that are coming over, being forced to come over by those in the cartels of Mexico and other Latin American countries. Keep an eye on this story. We have other news headlines from across the Southeast that we will be getting to as we move on throughout the day. When we come back, we've got a quick look at some Southern sports stories, including Lucas Glover picking up a big win, his second win in a row on the PGA Tour, except this time it was over $3 million deposited into the native South Carolinian's bank account as he picked up a victory Sunday in the playoff over Patrick Cantlay in the FedEx St. Jude Championship there in Memphis. We'll have a complete report, an insider's perspective of that win and other sports happenings as the Y'all Show Monday edition continues.
Information. Give me Memphis, Tennessee. Help me find a party to try to get in touch with me. She could not leave a number, but I know who place to call. Cause my uncle took the message and he wrote it on the wall. Help me, information. Get in touch with my Marie. She's the only one who'd call me if I'm Memphis, Tennessee. Her home is on the south side, high up on a ridge, just a half a mile from the Mississippi Bridge.
I bet you Lucas Glover is singing that tune here on this Monday. We're back here on the Y'all Show, talk with an accent on all things Southern, and the golfer out of Greenville, South Carolina originally, picked up his second straight win on the PGA Tour on Sunday as Lucas Glover won in a playoff over Patrick Cantlay in a tremendous win for the 40-something-year-old South Carolinian as he picked up the first of the championship tournaments that are going on. It's a playoff is what it is in the PGA Tour, and he wins over $3 million with this victory in Memphis. He won the previous week on the PGA Tour, and what a great win for Lucas Glover, who ended up coming into the Sunday round in the lead and was able to hold off people like Patrick Cantlay when it came down to it. Cantlay did get into the playoff, and on that first hole of the playoff, Cantlay got a little adventurous, the California native, and his ball barely went into the water on that dog leg left there at TPC Southwind, and he had to take a penalty stroke, and that one stroke ended up being the difference because Lucas Glover played it safe and calmly got him a par, and that was one stroke better than Patrick Cantlay. And what a big, big win for a guy, again, who's almost back in June, was off the tour because he couldn't quite get enough points and money coming in his way. Lucas Glover becomes only the third player in his 40s to win back-to-back weeks on the PGA Tour over the last 25 years. Kenny Perry, the Franklin, Kentucky native, did it back in 2003, and then Vijay Singh did it three different times, including back in the FedEx Cup playoffs of 2008. But Lucas Glover, the Clemson University alum, winning on the PGA Tour as he now moves into the upcoming event in Chicago, which is the second leg of the PGA Tour playoffs. Then after that, it's the Tour Championship at Eastlake in Atlanta, and that'll put a wrap on the 2023 season of the PGA Tour. So what a beautiful day, other than the little lightning delay. I was there in Memphis on Sunday, sweating my you-know-what off, but having a good time and enjoyed the sights and sounds. I'd been to this tournament before, but it was the first time I'd been to the FedEx St. Jude, with this now being considered a playoff tournament where so much more money is at stake, and it's essentially required if you're within the top 70 on the money standing and point standing to come to Memphis, where FedEx is based, and be part of this thing. So in the past, this tournament would have been, before the playoff shuffling around, it would have been a average PGA Tour event, middle of the road. Money was middle of the road. But now it's just one notch below being a major because of all the money involved. And the fact that you've got to win this to, or do well in this to move on to the second round, which this year is going to be at the Chicago golf course. And when I was there, I got to give shouts out to FedEx and those that put on this event. You know what the first thing I saw when I walked into the ticket area for this golf tournament? The first thing emblazoned on the big sign when you go in to give them your ticket was a beautiful purple, humongous sign that said, "Welcome, y'all." That was what you had to go underneath this tent that had a big sign that said, "Welcome, y'all," to enter the gates of the FedEx St. Jude Championship Sunday. And then, of course, this tournament's known for its signs that people hold up to tell you to be quiet when someone's getting ready to address the ball and hit it. And instead of the traditional signs that say quiet, in Memphis at the FedEx St. Jude Championship, they have beautiful purple signs that say "Hush, y'all." And that is actually the domain name for this golf tournament, hushyall.com. So I had a chance to go out there and get my picture holding up one of the Hush Y'all signs. I put this up on our flagship station's Facebook page. You can go to Supertalk 93.1 and see some of the pictures of me in my purple shirt and white cap having fun at the FedEx St. Jude. And I also have a photo, if you can't tell who that picture is of a golfer. That is my namesake, who is the number one player in the world, although he didn't play like it this past weekend. That is a picture of John Rahm there at Memphis. And John Rahm, the current Augusta National Masters champion, did not do very well in the Memphis tournament. And I can prove he didn't do well. On hole number, might have been hole 10, I was watching him. I was following John Rahm for a little bit. And after striking the ball out there in the fairway on the second shot, he gave a couple of expletives that are not suitable for air. And he kind of sounded like John Rawl out there on the golf course, John Rahm did. And anyway, he did not do that great, but he's still the world number one and is a Masters champion right now. He should have been wearing his green jacket out there if he was not going to be doing any better, but had a chance to see him, saw his lovely bride, had a chance to talk to her at a Memphis event a few years ago, and I was hoping to talk to her again on Sunday, but she was a little preoccupied. They got a couple of kids now, and I'm a fan of John Rahm, if nothing else, because he and I almost have the same exact name. But he's the world number one. He's going to try to get things fixed so he can make a better payday in Chicago, but congratulations to all those golfers. Yes, what happened was there was some lightning in the Memphis area Sunday, so they ended up stopping play for well over an hour and a half. And it was a very hot day, as you would expect in August in Memphis. And I got tired of waiting around, so I said, look, I'm out of here. So I made the couple-mile walk back to my car, and it was really weird. If you were wanting to come in to the tournament during that lightning delay, they would not let you in. So there were dozens of people standing outside the gates waiting to get in for an hour and a half, and security would not let them onto the golf course during that lightning delay. So when I walked out, I said, y'all are not missing anything in there right now. I had a good time. So it's a great thing to see golf played in Memphis, and they do a fantastic job for a good cause. If you saw any of that tournament coverage on CBS, you saw on the 18th hole some St. Jude patients actually get to hold the flag on that final hole, and the golfers all acknowledge the kids and usually give them a golf ball or a tee or something like that, or maybe a high five. It's a golf tournament with a purpose, and again, for right now, that FedEx St. Jude Championship is the first of three tournaments that are part of the playoff of the PGA Tour. Lucas Glover picks up his victory, the former U.S. Open champion. That's really been his biggest claim to fame throughout his career. Could he end up doing well enough in this playoff to capture the Tour Championship and win well over $10 million, I believe, is the payday for that thing, if you can win that at Eastlake, a place he ought to be pretty good at playing. Quickly, in the NFL on Sunday, there were a couple of preseason games, and I'll let you know the results of Sunday's games. The Saints actually picked up a victory over the Chiefs, 26-24 on Sunday, and the Las Vegas Raiders, 34-7 over the Niners in a battle of two teams that used to be based out of the Bay, and it was all Raiders on Sunday in preseason NFL action. No games for you tonight. I think next Monday, though, there is a Monday night NFL preseason game for all of you guys and gals that like to go down to the local watering hole and have a good time watching professional football. You should be in good shape. Well, that wraps up our sports look here for the opening hour of the Monday Y'all Show. When we come back on Y'all, we've got hashtag hullabaloo to tell you all about, and we've got within that some pictures coming out of the state of Tennessee, and I'll tell you all about gnats. That's coming up.
It's a strange old game to learn it slow. One step forward and it's back to go. You're standing on the throttle, you're standing on the brake. In the groove till you make a mistake. Sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug. Sometimes it all comes together, but sometimes you're a fool in love. Sometimes you're the Louisville Slugger. Sometimes you're the ball. Sometimes it all comes together, baby. Sometimes you're gonna lose it all.
Catchy little track there from Mary Chapin Carpenter on this Monday Y'all Show. Speaking of bugs, MCC, we've got some fun to tell you about from the insect life here on the hashtag hullabaloo portion of this Monday Y'all Show. Do y'all like gnats? Do you love gnats? Well, gnats are going to be on our mind now to tell you, thanks to a social media post that has come in about gnats. Gnats, gnats, and more gnats. No-see-ums, our favorite things. Yes, there's a account called No Gnats, N-A-T-Z, at No Gnats Products. And it is a botanical bug spray with natural essential oils developed in the marshes of Savannah, Georgia. No Gnats, N-A-T-Z is how it's spelled. And they put a tweet out that says, spray and enjoy summer. No Gnats botanical bug spray is DEET, DEET free, and made with natural active ingredients. I'm gonna have to try that out sometimes. No gnats. Now, I, after seeing this post, decided let's take a deep dive into gnats for a moment, if you don't mind. Because I grew up probably in the home of gnats. And I blame it more on the soil, that the sandy soil, the white sandy soil. They love that kind of soil, as far as I know, because I think gnats live in the ground. I think I'm right on that. I didn't pay attention that day in class when we were studying gnats growing up. So if I'm wrong, sorry, bug people. But gnats are found near and wide almost everywhere in the South. But I'm telling you, they like that sandy soil a little bit more. And they come out in droves when they're in that kind of soil type. If you've got any of that near you, you probably know what I'm talking about. But gnats have been a thing in the South for a long time. Even the great Louis Grizzard had something to say about gnats. And he called gnats a South Georgia hazard. Yes, Louis Grizzard. This might be a quote from him. Now, if it's not a quote from Louis Grizzard, it's from an article called Lifespan in Georgia, okay? Gnats. Here we go. Gnats, tiny bugs, are the cause of a number of deaths in South Georgia each year. Some of these deaths have been attributed to swallowing a large number of gnats while talking or eating. Some also think the reason a lot of South Georgians disappear and are never heard from again is they are carried off by giant swarms of gnats and drowned in the Okefenokee Swamp. Yeah, that would be a Louis Grizzard at his best right there. In Camilla, Georgia, which is in Mitchell County, they host an annual festival the first weekend of May in each year called Gnat Days. And it includes a music review, bike race, a gnat market, and a bunch of activities, including a gnat pageant. How would you like to be Miss Gnat? Go down to Camilla and you'll have a chance for that, ladies. Savannah's local minor league baseball team, it's now called the Savannah Bananas, but at one time it was called the Savannah Sand Gnats. Whew. And let me tell you, those sand gnats, also in the low country and in the Florida area called no-see-ums, those are brutal. These gnats bite you, and they hurt. They hurt big time. I got introduced to low country life in the spring of 1990, I guess is when this happened. Yes, when spring arrived. And I'll never forget having to go outside and be attacked by no-see-ums. And I couldn't do a thing about it. Now, day two, I got introduced to Skin So Soft, Avon product. And that helped. That definitely helped keep them away. But for that first day that no-see-ums met Big John, it was brutal. And I swell up like a Martian, frankly, when I start getting attacked by bugs. I bet you there's a chance you do too. Texas actually has several different species of gnats, one called the buffalo gnat. And it, according to experts, bites the blood right out of you. And there's even a place back in Georgia, we'll go for an update on gnats. There's a place in St. Simon's Island, and they also have one in Statesboro called, it's a restaurant known for its casual food. I don't know if you want to go there or not, but it's called Gnats Landing. Yikes. Gnats everywhere. And again, if you're like me and you grew up in an area where gnats are prevalent, they are pesky little creatures. You can't even say a sentence without swallowing a few of them. You can't open your eyes in some cases without gnats getting in your eyeballs. You can't breathe through your nose without a gnat getting stuck up in there. And as a youngster, I was in the marching band, and we would have to go out there and practice this time of year. And it was absolutely disgusting. When you're playing a brass instrument like I did, and you're and then you swallow about two or three gnats while you're playing, and then you start, and everybody's doing it. It's bad, y'all. Gnats. You know, Lord, do those things really have a purpose? Could you not find a way to get these things out of here? Because I don't know, other than having some fun memories of them, which is not really that fun now that I think about it. And I know the folks in Camilla, Georgia might have to come up with another festival instead of the Gnat Festival that they celebrate each year in May. We could probably come up with another solution than gnats, for goodness sake. Lord, help us out. Rid us of our problem. You gave us snakes. Do we really need gnats too? I guess some snakes feed off of gnats. All right, that one, let me move on to another. I got to move on from that one, if you don't mind. All right, gnats. I'm not going to be able to get through the rest of this day thinking about gnats and no-see-ums. All right, let's go to a Tennessee-related post that's coming in from Joseph. Joseph is on Twitter at GHRobinson94. He is an Englishman, and he identifies on here as a traditional Roman Catholic, an organist, and a photographer, and a biker. I bet you he's riding around Tennessee on a bike and taking lots of photos. At least that's what it appears. I don't know if he's playing that organ very much on this trip. But Joseph is on social media, and he's got some photos that he's posted on X of some beautiful pictures from the what looks like the East Tennessee Mountains with fog rolling in. And Joseph writes on here, "Thanks for the prayers for the traveling. I made it safely without a hitch. It's going to be quite nice staying in Tennessee for a while, methinks. Hashtag mountains, hashtag humidity, hashtag Catholic Twitter." And Joseph has these photos, and I'm pretty dang sure they are coming in from East Tennessee. He didn't give an exact location, but I wonder if they have mountains like they have in East Tennessee, that size mountains in jolly old England. I'm not aware that they do. I think there's some mountains up in Scotland. I haven't done a lot of UK traveling. So I bet you for someone like Joseph coming into the States and traveling to a beautiful state like Tennessee, he is probably in awe of the beautiful mountains and rolling hills. If you get over to Middle Tennessee, even West Tennessee's got some nice little hills scattered throughout. But I bet you he's having one heck of a time with the change of scenery that he's finding there on his Tennessee trip, this Englishman. Now, he said he's a biker. I don't know if that means like a motorized bike, or is he out on a bike where he's sweating his, you know what off this time of year. I tell you what, if you're on the old school bike without a motor on it and you're traveling in East Tennessee, you better have your legs in tip-top shape there, Joseph, because you're going to be having quite a few hills to climb on your trip here in the States, in the colonies. Although Tennessee was not a colony, it was not even thought about probably during the American Revolution. But we're glad that Tennessee's part of the U.S. of A. right now, and it allows people like Joseph to come over for a nice little vacay and enjoy the sights and sounds of the volunteer state. And wow, what a great, great photograph you've got there. And you know, it's a fun thing for a lot of people. Instead of going to the beach this time of year, August is a time for a lot of people to go to the mountains, and that evidently is what Joseph is doing. Now, Joseph, do us a solid and go over there and check out Dollywood and report back to us on what you think of that great little Tennessee spot there in the Sevierville area. All right, well, that will wrap up our fun for the first hour of Y'all Talk with an Accent on All Things Southern. When we come back in the second hour of Y'all, we're going to have plenty of talk about the Second Seminole War and some great Southerners having birthdays today. We'll let you know who all they are when we come back. Another hour of Y'all has arrived. We're the show that's all about the South, covering the 16 Southern states. John Rawl, the general of all things Southern, is your friendly pilot. And thank you for climbing aboard the show all about the South that we can find on great stations across the South. Plus, we are also in podcast form on Spotify, the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn app. You can find us on Apple Podcast and Apple iTunes, plus at y'all.com. Very easy to find us. And a fellow that I was hanging out with last week is all about Spotify, and he told me that he spent several hours catching up with some of our Y'all Show podcast the other day. So thank you, Mr. Chris, for doing that, and hopefully you enjoyed it. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And it was absolutely free. Now, operator standing by if you want to make a donation. Just kidding, just kidding. Appreciate everybody for if nothing else, for donating your time to listen to the Y'all Show, whether you're catching us right now on a radio station or you're taking time to listen to us on your own schedule thanks to the podcast options. Pretty easy and pretty fun to listen to the show all about the Southeast. Coming up in this second hour of our program, we've got news headlines from across the Southeast. How one Tennessee state senator has just been sentenced to 21 months in prison. Yikes. All because of a campaign finance violation. We'll have that story come in out of West Tennessee. Plus, we'll also have, in addition to our news headlines in the second hour, our Southern History Spotlight. And today, we're going to take you back to the Second Seminole War. And what was that all about? We'll explain. We'll learn together. Plus, we've got some Southerners that are pretty famous out there that are celebrating birthdays today. Happy birthday to Steve Martin and to Tim Tebow. We'll tell you about both of those young men in our Southern History and Southern Birthday Spotlight coming up later this hour. And before the hour comes to a end, we've got our Southern recipe of the day, and it is root beer pulled pork. Root beer. Could you imagine a barbecue sandwich that is cooked with root beer, and then you've got a root beer to drink it with? Heavenly, especially if you got a Barks root beer from Biloxi to go with it, too. In a bottle, of course. That recipe today comes to us from the website tasteofhome.com. We've got that coming up this hour. Hour three today, Megan Hedwall will be back on, and we're going to talk Democratic politics. We're going to talk about, is Joe Biden going to have any kind of real competitor in the Democratic race for president in the primary portion of the 2024 election? We'll have all that discussion with Megan. Plus, we've got a spotlight on the Virginia Tech Hokies in our final hour, as the Hokies are our featured school today, as we're getting you ever so close to the start of college football's 2023 season. The season is now less than 2 weeks away. And today, it's Virginia Tech. By the way, on Tuesday, we'll be spotlighting the Mississippi State Bulldogs. Hail, dear old state! That's Tuesday. Wednesday's Y'all Show. Our featured school will be Roll Wave Tulane. Your defending American Conference champion and Cotton Bowl champion Tulane Green Wave will be our Wednesday featured school. Thursday will be your two-time national champion Georgia Bulldogs will be who will be walking through their schedule and give you our expert predictions for the Dogs in 2023. And then Friday, our school will be another set of Bulldogs, a set of Bulldogs that played those other Bulldogs from Athens pretty well in 2022. We're going to go to the FCS level Friday and give you a complete preview of the Samford Bulldogs out of the Southern Conference in the FCS ranks. The SoCon's current champion, the Samford Bulldogs. We're going to walk through Chris Hatcher's ball club, tell you a little bit about their schedule. And times are good there in Homewood, Alabama, where Samford is located. They are your conference champions. They've turned it around there, and their former quarterback is now Laney Wilson's boyfriend. We're talking about Devlin Hodges. So, yeah, times are good for the Samford Bulldogs in the Birmingham area, and we're going to feature them Friday to kind of close out the week as we give you all these teams' info and traditions and more. And I've been to several Samford football games. I know about them red and blue Bulldogs. And we'll let you know who all they've got on their 2023 schedule. The SoCon champ, Sam, not Stan. That'll be our Friday show. So we've got a bunch of Bulldogs. We've got Mississippi State, Georgia, and Samford all being profiled here this week on the Y'all Show. So get ready for that. Let's pick up our news headlines across the Southeast today. And we start off with a story out of West Tennessee, where a former state senator of the state of Tennessee, Brian Kelsey, he has now been sentenced to 21 months in federal prison for a violation of campaign finance laws. Now, he represented the Collierville area and also Germantown in that portion of Shelby County in Tennessee. Kelsey was sentenced following 3 years of supervised release. This Germantown, Tennessee Republican represented those East Shelby County suburbs, and he pleaded guilty in November to conspiracy to defraud the Federal Election Commission and aiding and abetting the acceptance of excessive contributions. All this during a failed 2016 congressional campaign. I guess he would have been going up against David Kustoff, who is the current congressman for that portion of West Tennessee. Kelsey, again, a state senator in the past in Tennessee, initially pleaded not guilty, calling the case a political witch hunt. He later changed his plea and sought to withdraw his guilty plea. His sentencing delayed several times. The attorney for the Middle District of Tennessee, Henry Leventis, said Kelsey, who was himself an attorney, ignored advice from political advisors and an attorney. And now this guy's going to go off to prison for a couple of months, federal prison, for campaign finance woes. Brian Kelsey, Germantown, Tennessee. How about this story coming to us from Mississippi, in North Mississippi? Hernando is right south of Memphis, and they're now in that area looking, trying to find the police department, trying to find a missing digital radar speed sign. It was stolen sometime between August 8th and August 9th. That would have been early last week. Hernando police say these radar signs are very costly and they need help getting it back. If you have any information on who stole the missing radar signs in Hernando, Mississippi, in DeSoto County there, if you've got any kind of information you want to pass along, please, please give them a call. 662-429-9096. 662-429-9096. Now, why would somebody steal a digital radar sign? Unless you're out training to go to play in the major leagues where you're trying to get you a proper speed of your pitch, you have no reason to have a digital radar sign in your possession. Come on now, what's going on in Hernando that they would be out doing that? By the way, this one's for Mr. Stovall, who follows me on our flagship station, the Patriot Pastor. I was in DeSoto County Sunday, and you know what, Patriot Pastor? You got competition because they recently had an election in DeSoto County and across Mississippi, and they were electing sheriffs. And Patriot Pastor, did you realize that there's a guy in that county in Mississippi who identifies as the Patriot Sheriff? And so he's got a website called PatriotSheriff.com, I think it is. I don't know if he won his primary or not, but PatriotSheriff.com is who was running for DeSoto County Sheriff. And maybe it's that Patriot Sheriff that needs to get on the case there and his county seat of Hernando and find out who the heck's been stealing radar signs in that nice little bedroom community of Memphis in Northwest Mississippi. We'll get to the bottom of it for sure. And I think it would be the Patriot Sheriff more than likely is going to help us out in Hernando, Mississippi. I think I got that about covered. Yeah. All right. I still miss those days as a kid. A few times at some of the arcades, they had the radar guns that you could pitch. I remember, was it J.R. Ryan was a Houston Astros guy that was pitching over 100 miles per hour way back in the day, and he had his own branded line of radar tossing deals you could do at like an arcade. And I wanted to be throwing 100 miles per hour. Boy, the Astros, I believe, at that time had JR and they had Nolan Ryan, too. They were really good in baseball back in the early 1980s. Still couldn't win the big one, though. I don't think they even got to the World Series at that time. But they've made up for it. They are your defending World Series champion, Houston Astros, by the way. And finally here, a story out of Alabama and a story that has to do with food. Chef Brody Olive, he's from Orange Beach, Alabama, and he and his right-hand man, Louis Sylvester, exchanged a high five and a hug here recently because they were crowned winners of the Great American Seafood Cook-Off, and that's Alabama's second winner in this competition that started way back in 2005. Yes, congratulations to Brody on getting this big, big winner. The previous Alabama winner was Jim Smith. So congratulations. And the funny story here about Chef Brody is how in the world he even got involved in this competition. He grew up in Georgia and then went on to Charleston, South Carolina to attend Johnson and Wales University. That's where you can go to become a big fancy cook, is what it is. And then started working in restaurants in West Florida and more. And then he entered this 2023 Alabama Seafood Cook-Off. But he only got into it because he had bad days of fishing and decided to do something about it. So yeah, he often fishes the rocky jetties of Perdido Pass. That's just off of Perdido Beach Resort. And he calls what he does ninja warrior fishing. He says you get a couple of rods, a bucket, and then you got a bait bucket full of shrimp with you, and then you're out there fishing a little over 700 yards of rock, probably fishing there on his honey hole. But evidently he was having a hard time on his fishing efforts here recently and decided to, I think I might enter this cooking competition. And in the end, this guy from Orange Beach, Alabama, who cooks at the Perdido Beach Resort there, the Voyager's restaurant, I believe, is where he cooks, ends up winning. Congratulations to Chef Brody Olive, again, the Great American Seafood Cook-Off winner from Alabama, where they know a thing or two about fishing, both the freshwater and the saltwater variety. And that's a look at some of our fun headlines across the Southeast here in the second hour of the Y'all Show. When we come back, we've got here on the Y'all Show, we've got a chance to take this break, but on our return, we will give you plenty of history because we're going to tell you all about the Second Seminole War as it began this week in history, plus some Southerners with birthdays, some folks you've heard of. All that is coming right up.
Everglades, where the black water rolls and the sawgrass waves. The eagles fly and the otters play in the land of the Seminole. So blow, blow, Seminole wind, blow like you're never gonna blow again. I'm calling to you like a long lost friend, but I know who you are. And blow, blow from the Okeechobee all the way up to Micanopy. Blow across the home of the Seminole, the alligators and the dogs.
Oh, man, I could listen to that song 1,000 times and not get tired of it. John Anderson, the Florida native there, with a wonderful song from some 30 years ago. We're back on the Y'all Show. We're going to talk a little history, if you don't mind, for the next bit here on the show that shakes the Southland. This is our Southern History Spotlight for this Monday. And we're going to talk off, when we start here this segment, talk all about the Seminole Wars. As this week in history, the Second Seminole War kind of got up and going, or actually ended, rather, on this date, August 14th of 1842, a war that lasted some 7 years. I'll tell you about the Second Seminole War, but let me first tell you about the First Florida War, if you will. And it started way back in 1816 in Spanish Florida. The result, an American victory in that pitted forces of the United States against the Seminole, the Choctaw, and freedmen. Osceola was, of course, the Seminole leader that you heard John Anderson just singing about there. And he was captured and actually taken to Charleston and died on Sullivan's Island in captivity. And I think his body's buried somewhere in South Carolina, right there on that barrier island of Sullivan's Island. Never thought you'd see a Seminole chief lose his life in South Carolina, but that's what happened. Andrew Jackson, again, was a big part of the whole Seminole Wars, having fought in these things in the 18-teens, 1816 through 19, is when he fought John Tyler, who would go on to become president, also was a person that fought are involved in this whole effort as president. This stretched the Seminole War from 1816 all the way to 1858, if you include both the First and Second Seminole Wars. And there was a Treaty of Moultrie Creek in 1823, and that was between the U.S. and the Seminole Nation. The Seminoles were removed from Northern Florida to a reservation in the center of the Florida Peninsula, and the U.S. constructed a series of forts and trading posts along the Gulf and Atlantic coast to enforce the treaty, the Treaty of Moultrie Creek. This essentially put Indians all in the area that we call now Central Florida during that First Seminole War. Then you had the Second Seminole War break out in 1835, some dozen years after that treaty supposedly put the Seminoles all onto one reservation there in Central Florida. The Second Seminole War began as a result of the U.S. voiding the Treaty of Moultrie Creek and demanding that all Seminoles go to Indian territory in Oklahoma after the Indian Removal Act of 1830 was passed. And so the U.S. essentially telling the Central Florida occupants on the reservation there that's not good enough. They've got to go to Oklahoma. Seminole fighters were outnumbered, but they fought back. They used guerrilla warfare and eventually numbered over 30,000 people fighting against the United States troops that were sent there to remove them to Oklahoma. A U.S. General Thomas Sidney Jessup was sent to Florida to take over command in 1836. And there was some nasty fighting during that time period. Jessup violated the rules of war and spent 21 years defending himself over it. according to reports. Seminoles losing their lives in this battle of the Second Seminole War, and many of them starved and were removed to Indian territory ultimately. There was no official peace treaty. Several hundred Seminoles returned to Southwest Florida after the conflict wound down. But I will tell you that it was on this date, August 14, 1842, that the Second Seminole War, you could say, came to an end with the Treaty of Payne's Landing in the state of Florida. The total losses during this war of the Second Seminole War, which lasted from 1835 to 1842, that's almost 7 years of fighting in Central Florida. There were over 3,000 Seminoles who lost their lives in this war, and there were more than 1,600 U.S. Army and military personnel who died fighting the Seminoles, all in a land grab. That's what this was. This was during the Andrew Jackson time period, and it was all to kick out the Seminoles and send them to Indian territory as part of the Trail of Tears. In this case, the Seminole and some Choctaw evidently were part of the fight to keep the Bluecoats from taking over this portion of the state of Florida. Go look at it. Go if you get the chance. Research this. There's a lot more to the Second Seminole War, but it was during this time period in the early part of the 19th century that this was going on in Florida, and it came to an end, at least the Second Seminole War. There was even something called a Third Seminole War that took place 1855 to 1858. A very ugly chapter of our country, of our region, was the removal of our American Indian tribes, and in the case of the Seminoles, truly heroes because they fought. They fought for their land, and they were ultimately, for the most part, removed, although there are still some proud Seminoles who found a way to hang on to portions of Florida, and they are celebrated. They have a proud history in that portion of our region. Today also marks Victory Over Japan Day, VJ Day. And that marked when Imperial Japan surrendered in World War II, bringing the war to an end. It was the initial announcement of Japan's capitulation, August 14th or 15th, depending where you were, 15th in Japan, 14th here stateside. But a victory that brought World War II to an end. The official ceremony did not happen until the 2nd of September in 1945 on the deck of the USS Missouri, the Mighty Mo. And VJ Day today, we've got a handful of our World War II veterans still with us, including those who fought in the Pacific. Thank you for your sacrifice, for your heroism, for answering the call to go preserve the world, frankly. And you did it there. Victory Over Japan Day today here in America and throughout the world. Today is also the birth of Doc Holliday, the gambler, the gunfighter, and the dentist, and a close friend of Wyatt Earp. And John Henry Holliday was born in Griffin, Georgia, August 14th, 1851. And he was of English and Scottish ancestry. Doc Holliday attended the Valdosta Institute. And in 1870, Holliday left home, not for the West, but for Philadelphia? Yeah, he sure did. At the age of 20, Doc Holliday received his Doctor of Dental Surgery, which was part of the University of Pennsylvania School of Dental Medicine. How about that? Dr. Holliday. And then moved on to St. Louis after he became a doctor. And then got into a fight in Georgia. And things started to turn. He was diagnosed with tuberculosis. Moved to Dallas. And then keeps heading west. Got to be buddies with Wyatt Earp. And got into confrontations and more. Would ultimately move to Arizona and have the gunfight at the OK Corral in 1881. What a character out of the Old West. I had no idea he was a dentist. I really didn't know he was from Georgia originally. Doc Holliday, who was born August 14th in the year 1851. He was just a small boy when the Civil War was being raged there in his native Georgia. He would die at the age of 36 in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, and he died in 1887. And a character from the Old West born on this date in the 1800s. And he was killed as part of the Leadville shooting. It was his last known confrontation in Leadville, Colorado in 1884. Down to his last dollar, Doc Holliday had pawned his jewelry and then borrowed $5 from a guy named Billy Allen. Allen was a bartender, and Doc enabled Allen to carry a gun and make arrests within the Monarch Saloon. When Allen repeatedly demanded to be repaid or else, Holliday could not comply and was afraid, and Doc knew that Allen was usually stopped by Hyman's Saloon when he was finished at the Monarch. So ultimately they got, I think, a little bit of a problem there. And got, again, tuberculosis. I think he died. I'm not really sure. You'll have to go check out the Doc Holliday story sometime. Coming to a theater near you. Just kidding. Also born on this day in history, Ernest Everett Just, a black biologist and academic and a science writer. And he's known for his work in marine biology and pathogenesis. And he advocated for the study of whole cells under normal conditions. And this man, born in 1883 in Charleston, South Carolina. And what an academic he was. He was a marine biologist and so much more. Ernest Everett Just, who lived until 1941. He died at age 58 and had quite the academic career as a biologist and more. Ernest Everett Just. Also born on this day in history, baseball's Earl Weaver. He was born in St. Louis back in 1930. And he ended up working. His dad, Earl Milton Weaver, was a dry cleaner who used to clean the uniforms of the St. Louis Cardinals and the St. Louis Browns. And he also grew up with that baseball environment of being in St. Louis. Earl Weaver started managing minor league teams for the Knoxville Smokies back in the 1950s. And then he was a manager of the Orioles minor league team in Fitzgerald, Georgia, in the Georgia Florida League. He went from Fitzgerald to Baltimore. How about that? Earl Weaver, who was with the Orioles from 1968 to 82 as its manager, and then from the 85 to 86 seasons as well, winning the World Series in 1970 as the skipper of the O's. His number 4 jersey retired by the Baltimore Orioles, and he's in the Orioles Hall of Fame. Longtime baseball manager Earl Weaver, born on this date in history. Also born on this day in history, Dash Crofts of the group Seals and Crofts, as Dash was born in Texas in 1938, born in Cisco. And he was part again of the group Seals and Crofts alongside Jimmy Seals, who I think was Dan Seals' brother. I think I got that right. They had a couple of big songs, Seals and Crofts, Summer Breeze, Diamond Girl, and Get Closer, all back in the 1970s. And this man who was born August 14th, 1940, is still alive. Jimmy Eugene Seals passed away last year. But Dash Crofts, still with us, the Texan and a member of Seals and Crofts with that great 70 sound, Summer Breeze. Another Texan with a birthday today. Congratulations and happy birthday. Birthday number 78 today for Stephen Glenn Martin, a.k.a. Funny Man Steve Martin, as he was born in Waco back in 1945. And he was a writer on the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour and would go on to be a frequent host on Saturday Night Live when it got going back in the 1970s. And, of course, we know Steve Martin from his tremendous film list of films that he was in, from Parenthood to Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, The Man with Two Brains, and more. Then his great bluegrass work that he's been known for here in recent years. Steve Martin, the son of Mary Lee and Glenn Vernon Martin, who was a real estate salesman and aspiring actor of his own there in Texas. And Martin, with a big birthday today, happy birthday, Steve Martin. Also with a birthday today, NASCAR's Rusty Wallace. Rusty was born in Arnold, Missouri in 1956, so he is now 67. 67 today, Rusty Wallace, who was a Winston Cup Series champion back in 1989. And it's been a number of years since he's been out there racing, of course. But one of the good ones back in the days of NASCAR's 1980s and 90s. And he won the Winston Cup in 89, as I said. And he's been inducted into the NASCAR Hall of Fame. He had that honor bestowed upon him in 2013. He's in the International Motorsports Hall of Fame and the Motorsports Hall of Fame of America. So a lot of honors for the Missouri native Rusty Wallace. Happy birthday today, sir. Today's also the birthday of Bill Hagerty, Tennessee's junior U.S. Senator, the politician, the businessman, and diplomat, as he was the U.S. ambassador to Japan during the Trump presidency. And he's worked as an economic advisor and White House fellow for President George H.W. Bush and more. Bill Hagerty, born in Gallatin, Tennessee, back in 1959. So he is now 64 years young. He got his bachelor's and law degree from Vanderbilt University. So anchor down, Bill Hagerty. Today is his birthday. If you're in Tennessee, happy Hagerty Day. Today is also the birthday of Tim Tebow. And he was born not in the South, but he was born in the Philippines, as his parents were missionaries over there. Tim Tebow, born August 14th of 1987. The former Florida Gator quarterback and also for a time a Denver Bronco, New York Jet, and New England Patriot quarterback. And even last year, or was it now 2 years ago, he was a tight end in camp at least for the Jacksonville Jaguars. A two-time national champion player at the University of Florida and your 2007 Heisman Trophy winner. And at one time, a baseball player for the Columbia Fireflies of the New York Mets organization. Tim Tebow with a big birthday today. Happy birthday. One of the South's most famous sons. I would definitely have to throw that out there. Got a text here I want to read real quick as it's come in right in time for our discussion of Southern history today. Texter says, I've got a Commercial Appeal newspaper, that's the old newspaper out of Memphis, a Commercial Appeal newspaper on my wall announcing the official end of the war, a beautiful VJ day. Well, Texter, you hold on to that. That is something you want to hold on to and preserve, and maybe get a good digital copy of that as well, because, heck, one of these days, not only are people not going to know what VJ Day is, they're not going to know what a newspaper is. So you make sure you hang on to that. But congratulations. And again, today is Victory Over Japan Day, August 14th. Victory Over Europe, the Victory in Europe Day, the Victory Over Germany, the Nazis, is May 8th. And I've had the pleasure of going into the room in Reims, France, where that surrender happened. And it's quite powerful. I don't think there's anything quite to that effect for the Victory Over Japan, because most of those people at that time would have been on battleships and aircraft carriers when they were doing their thing. In fact, the actual surrender of Japan happened, the official surrender happened, as we said, September 2nd, on the deck of the USS Missouri. And that is a museum, as far as I know. I think it's in Hawaii is where the Mighty Moe's Museum is. If it's not there, it might be in San Diego. But yes, check it out. That's the closest we can get to a VE, or rather a VJ memorial, but a very, very cool thing that you've got that newspaper clipping and you hang on to it. Now, if you could just go get one for VE Day, you'll be in great, great, even better shape. Thank you for that text again. You can text us here at the Y'all Show, and we appreciate all of you who do that, and all the feedback that we get. mail@y'all.com is our email address. We'll take a break. When we come back, we've got food on our mind. We're combining root beer and barbecue. What a recipe from tasteofhome.com. We'll share that and a whole lot more as the Y'all Show Monday edition continues. Stay tuned.
Your own, then you leave me alone. I'm wasting my tears on you. While I settle down, you're still painting the town. I'm wasting my tears on you. You promised time and time again to stop two-timing me. Oh, I knew better even then, I couldn't set you free. I love you somehow, but it's all over now. I'm wasting my tears on you.
And as we have VJ Day today, representing the Victory Over Japan in World War II, that song was out during 1945. That was the very first big hit, the number one song for Tex Ritter. And I'm wasting my tears on you. Tex Ritter, the singer for out of Merval, Texas. And, of course, did a little acting as well. And his son, John Ritter. You remember John Ritter?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, you need to Google him sometime. We got Megan back. Megan. How you doing, Megan?
Good.
Megan Headwall here as we're going to wrap up our second hour. And then we've got a lot of political talk coming in the third hour of today's Y'all Show. Are you ready for that?
We'll find out.
If you're not, I'll tell you, we got the perfect way to get ready for political talk, and that's talking about food.
Oh, I love some food.
Yeah. Do you like root beer?
I love root beer.
Well, we've got, courtesy of tasteofhome.com, a root beer pulled pork recipe. Yummy. Have you ever thought about combining root beer and food?
No. Unless I'm using it like as a drink.
Okay, you've done that. Do you have a favorite root beer brand?
I just like root beer floats.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
From?
You can make them homemade.
Okay, you do that?
Nowhere specific.
All right, well, I mean, I'm assuming you were going to tell me like Dairy Queen. But Dairy Queens aren't on every corner of America.
They're not, but they are good.
And I don't want you to, you know, since we're talking, we called you MAGA Megan. You know, Trump got in trouble the other week for not knowing what a blizzard was.
No, I didn't see that. I missed that
one. He was in Iowa.
Uh-oh.
And he was like, what the hell is a blizzard? Whenever people were, he gave out, or he supposedly gave out blizzards when he went inside a Dairy Queen in Iowa. And he started handing out these things. He goes, what the hell is a blizzard?
Uh-oh.
And he got a lot of trouble for that. But, you know, I grew up in an area where Dairy Queen was not that common. Did you?
No, I did. Yeah.
Dairy Queen's were...
Yeah, in fact, I had Dairy Queen last night.
Well, good for you, but I didn't. It wasn't until I moved to Alabama and a long time ago that I started seeing Dairy Queens more often. I asked my mother about this not long ago after the Trump thing came out. I said, was there a Dairy Queen near our hometown? She said there was one probably 20 miles away. But there were plenty of other dessert options between our house and that place. So I think I might have seen that place, but we didn't really go hang out there. And something tells me also I'm so freaking old, I don't think they even had blizzards back when I was growing up. So, yeah. How does that make you feel?
Young.
Well, yeah, yeah, it makes you, should make you feel young. But today on the Y'all Show, we're going to go to this website again, tasteofhome.com. They've got a recipe called a root beer pulled pork sandwich. So I know you like root beer. Do you like pulled pork?
Yes.
I thought you would, yes. Well, we've got this blend of two things that Megan likes. It's all about the Megan. This is a recipe that you can go to tasteofhome.com. You need a boneless pork shoulder, a can of root beer, a bottle of barbecue sauce, and then a bunch of Kaiser rolls. And you end up making this great, great tasting barbecue pulled pork recipe with a bunch of root beer. You place the roast in a cooker, add the root beer. This is something you don't have to have like a smoker in the backyard. You can do it in a crock pot, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
You put it all in there, the ingredients, and you let it do its thing on low for 8 to 10 hours. And then you remove the roast, cool it, get rid of the cooking juices. Then you shred the pork with two forks. And ultimately, you've got included in that the barbecue sauce. And you can serve it on these Kaiser rolls. And it is a blend of delicious pork and root beer.
Sounds like a heart attack waiting to happen.
I don't think so. Would you have root beer as the drink for this dish, or would you go get something else?
I don't know. I guess it depends how it tastes, but you might have to.
You might have to. Do you have a favorite root beer brand?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, there's some offbeat root beer brands.
Yeah, there are, but...
Have you ever had a Barks root beer?
I have not.
Okay. That is a Coca-Cola product now, but they started down in Biloxi, Mississippi, and when they sold out many years ago to Coca-Cola, part of their deal with Coke was that they would still be able to bottle Barks root beer down on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. So you can get bottles of real
root beer
bottle. You can find them in other portions of the South, but they're made down in Mississippi, and boy, they're good. I used to give those things out to radio stations when I was trying to get affiliates.
Oh.
Pretty good little bribe, don't
yeah.
you think? But that's the recipe again. Tasteofhome.com is where you can go and get your fill of a roast beer or a root beer pulled pork sandwich. Mm-mm. Just like mama never made. Megan's going to be with me for the third hour of the Y'all Show. Y'all stay tuned. It's going to be fun. We're going to talk a lot of Democratic politics. Yeehaw! Podcasting on great stations across the Southeast. Plus, we're in podcast form on Spotify, iHeartRadio, the TuneIn app, as well as Apple Podcast and Apple iTunes, and at y'all.com, too. We are the Y'all Show. John and Megan here for the final hour. Glad to be with you. And if you'd like to get involved with y'all, we have an email address, mail@yall.com is the easy way to reach out to us. We've got news headlines from across the region that we're going to get to in a moment. Plus, we have coming up in this second, or rather this final hour in our second segment, Megan and I are going to talk about Democratic contenders for president in 2024. Now, right now we know of Biden, and then the Marianne lady, and then we know of RFK Jr. But are we going to have any more? Well, there is at least one somewhat prominent Democratic politician that says, yeah, we need to give Joe Biden a little competition. Yeah. And we're going to talk about that. That guy, I don't know if you looked into his background, he is somewhat famous based on who his grandma was.
No, I missed that
part. Yeah, well, I'll tell you. That's what we call in the biz a cliffhanger. So we'll tell you about what this guy from Minnesota is out on national TV shows talking about giving Joe Biden a little run for the money, perhaps. Not from him, but he's trying to say, hey, we need somebody to step up, which is pretty unusual that you've got Democrats saying, we might need to really make a change here and stop playing footsie with Joe Biden. So that's coming up. And then before we get out of here in this final hour of our Monday show, we're going to take you to Blacksburg, because the Virginia Tech Hokies are our latest stop on our tour across the Southeast. Megan, we're now less than 2 weeks away from college football getting going. Now, most teams are closer to 3 weeks. Labor Day weekend is when the big boys, the biggest boys of football, get going for that particular weekend. But even Notre Dame is going to have a game, I think, coming up that week zero week, which is less than 2 weeks away. Notre Dame and Navy. I know you'll be tuning in. From Ireland is where that game's going to be held. And that's coming up in less than 2 weeks. So we got plenty of college football courtesy of the Virginia Tech Hokies. Plus, if I have a moment, I'll let you know about how Bobby Dodd Stadium, home of Virginia Tech's ACC foe Georgia Tech, is having a name change. Yeah, some big news out of Atlanta that we'll share with you as part of our sports headlines before we say goodbye here on this Monday edition. As far as our news headlines here, some developing stories that are happening right now. The Coast Guard is searching for four divers who disappeared Sunday off of the Carolinas. The four men did not resurface while diving from a pleasure craft named Big Bill's, and the Coast Guard, in a news release that's just come out, said that the vessel was about 50 miles south of Cape Fear in North Carolina and about 63 miles east of Myrtle Beach in South Carolina. There are a lot of shipwrecks off of that portion of the Carolina coast, and so they were likely there in the graveyard of the Atlantic, and now these four divers are missing. So our thoughts are certainly with the U.S. Coast Guard, and what a job they do each and every day. I mean, this is not somewhere 2 miles off the coast. This is some 50 miles at least off of our mainland, where the Coast Guard's going out there looking for help and trying to find a survivor or any kind of evidence or more. And then all the work they do inland. You know, they patrol the rivers well inland. The Coast Guard, we don't give them enough credit, but they're searching right now for these four divers missing since Sunday off the Carolina coast. We wish them well. A really, really awful story that has gotten a little bit of national play over the last few months, but it's been picking up here over the weekend, because six former law officers in the state of Mississippi are expected today to plead guilty to state charges for torturing two black men in a racist assault after admitting their guilt in a connected federal civil rights case. And these officers, for the most part, are out of Rankin County Sheriff's Office there in central Mississippi. And then there's also one member of the Richland, Mississippi police force also being charged here, as these men supposedly sort of kidnapped two guys, put a gun in one of them's mouth, shot it accidentally, and it was just a really almost unheard of story for the 21st century that came out of Mississippi. Now, luckily, the two black men, Michael Corey Jenkins and Eddie Terrell Parker, did not get killed here, but they were targeted, according to reports, because somebody complained that these two men were staying at the home of a white woman, according to court documents. So this case, again, getting some attention today as they're expected to plead guilty in the state of Mississippi. President Trump, we're going to hear about the Democratic side of things in a minute, but President Trump was in Alabama over the weekend, and he said, hey, bring those indictments on, because one more indictment means that I'm going to close out this election. So, Megan Headwall, Is President Trump right on that?
Yeah, probably.
Probably?
Yeah. Like I said, I think it's opening people's eyes. The more they go after him, they're seeing how corrupt.
Well, he says if when they come after me, they're coming after you.
Yep. He's the last thing standing in the way is what he says. Well, that's what he says.
But Megan doesn't say that. Yes, President Trump in the Montgomery area over the weekend with this big Republican Party dinner in the state of Alabama. President Trump has pleaded not guilty to crimes related to his efforts to overturn the 2020 election loss. Again, this is his latest indictment was last week. His latest indictment is expected this week. Fonnie Willis in Fulton County is expected to have an indictment there for his interference in the Georgia numbers of the 2020 presidential race. You going to go down to Atlanta and keep an eye on that one for us?
Sure.
You going to talk to Fonnie?
No.
Well, you should. Ask her what's up. Hey, what's up? All right, and as we close out our headlines from across the Southeast today, I want to let you know that you weren't in Hernando, Mississippi recently, were you?
No, I wasn't.
Well, they have a digital radar sign that's been stolen, and they want it back.
Oh.
So my question is, why would somebody steal a big, gigantic radar sign? It's not like you can hide it.
Maybe they wanted to see how fast they could run past it.
Maybe so. Yes, this was stolen in DeSoto County in Mississippi, where Hernando is the county seat. And if you've seen or if you see a big, gigantic digital radar sign, chances are somebody stole it in the area of St. Ives Lane and Huntington Lane, and they stole it between August 8th and August 9th. And Hernando wants it back. If you've got info, you can call 662-429-9096 and get them their sign back. Now, the question is, does that mean if it's missing, you can speed a little bit more than you normally would in Hernando?
Probably not.
Probably not? You think they got other ways to track you? Yeah. I think you're probably right there, Megan. When we come back on the Y'all Show, we're going to scoot over and talk about Democratic politics. Boy, we are excited about this one.
Get our blood pressure up. Here we go.
And we're going to talk about, will there really be people stepping up to potentially challenge Joe Biden? People more than RFK Jr. People more than, was it Marianne Williamson, I think's her name?
Yeah, I think that's right.
She's run before for president. Is somebody willing to give Papa Joe a run for the money? We'll talk about that. There's one Democratic congressman out of Minnesota that's going on the national talk shows and discussing this same subject. And we'll play some of that and get Megan's thoughts when the Y'all Show Monday edition comes right back. Taking you back some 10 years to Cassidy Pope music here on the Monday Y'all Show. It's John, it's Megan, and we're going to talk a little politics in this segment, some Democratic politics. And we'll get a perspective that is not often being talked about right now, Megan, and that is, should Joe Biden get some competition in 2024? And what do you say on the Democratic primary side?
I think so.
You think so?
Yeah.
And those reasons would be?
We need better options on the Democratic side just in case they take this election too.
Okay. So you don't think an 85-year-old Joe Biden would make a good president?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Hate mail to Megan.
I'll take it.
All right. So Joe Biden right now has, for the most part, been coronated the Democratic nominee for 2024.
Yeah.
Robert Kennedy is not really going to take that over as we currently sit. Is that a fair statement?
I don't think so.
And then you got Marianne Williamson, who's also running. Those are the only two that I've heard of.
Yeah, which no one's even really talking about her. I feel no. like I haven't heard much on her.
And she ran, I think she was even on a debate back 4 years ago. Mm. Pretty sure she was in the 2020 primary season. And I know she was at least early on, back when Kamala got 0.something% before she backed out. Remember, she got out of that thing early.
Mm-hmm.
And ended up being picked by Biden to be his vice president. So, Republicans are doing their thing. We still don't have a clue who's going to come out of that. It looks like Trump should get it, mm-hmm. but we might see Trump in a jail cell a year from right now, if some people had their way.
Yeah, if some people had their way.
Yeah, like Megan.
No.
So, that's the one side, but on the Democratic side, there's not much being said that there needs to be a really good option for that ticket. So that brings us to over the weekend. I stumbled upon an interview by Dean Phillips. He is not from the South. He is a Yankee. He is from Minnesota. Dean Phillips is a Democratic congressman from the great, not great, what are they? The land of a thousand lakes, whatever the heck they are.
Yeah. 10,000 lakes.
Yeah, that too. And so I'm not supposed to be an expert on things up there, but I am down here, okay? And so Dean Phillips was on all kinds of talk shows here recently, and we're going to let you hear some of his conversation as he was on the clip I'm about to play recently on Face the Nation. I saw him being interviewed by CNN's Jake Tapper last week, and that was an awesome interview he did there. We're going to go hear his Face the Nation interview that he recently did here. But this guy is essentially saying we need another option. As Democrats, we need to find another option, or at least have it be considered at this point.
Right.
Which is smart if you're a Democrat. It's smart if you're a Republican. You just never know. But yes, he was just the other day on Face the Nation, and what a great job that he was able to come on and do this interview. Let's go here. This fairly young, I think he's an Ivy League educated lawyer turned politician, Dean Phillips, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about his own personal background, which is pretty amazing. Dean Phillips now talking about how Democrats need to look at another option for 2024.
Democrats are telling me that they want not a coronation, but they want a competition. The New York Times poll from this week shows 55% of Democratic voters want some alternatives to the current people in the primary. 83% of those under 30, Democrats under 30, want alternatives, and about 76% of independents. So I just want to make my case.
When are you going to decide?
I think, well, let me get to my point.
Okay.
So if we don't heed...
I've given you some room.
Yes, you have. If we don't heed that call, shame on us. And the consequences, I believe, are going to be disastrous. So my call is to those who are well-positioned, well-prepared, of good character and competency, they know who they are, to jump in, because Democrats and the country need competition. It makes everything better. That's my call to them right now.
So if they don't, you will?
I'm not saying I will. I think I'm well-positioned to be president of the United States.
You do?
I do not believe I'm well-positioned to run for it right now. People who are should jump in, because we need to meet the moment. The moment is now. That is what the country is asking.
I gave you some running room, so let's tighten up the answers if we can. Can sure. President Biden beat Donald Trump?
I think he can, but I think the only way to determine that objectively is to go through a process. By the way, before it's too late, and I want to tell you this about President Biden, an amazing man. Mm. I love the man. He is competent. He is honorable. His integrity, I believe, is unvarnished. He has led this country through extraordinarily difficult times. This is not about him. This is about listening to people. And I'm afraid in this bubble here in Washington, people get real tone deaf real fast, and we should be listening. That's what this is about. It's my call to action.
Assess Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s campaign.
Well, first of all, I like competition. I'm pleased that people...
Is he an adequate competitor?
Not the one that I'm looking for. I don't believe him to be a Democrat.
Is there something telling?
Let me say this.
In what's happened around him?
I think there is something telling. I think he's using a very similar playbook to a former president who did the same in the Republican Party just a little while ago. And I think we should be cautious of that. I also think that's why we need alternatives. I don't believe him to be a Democrat. I do believe, though, that speech is good. More speech is even better. We need alternatives for the massive majority of the middle in America.
To make sure
to have some alternatives too.
Correctly, you don't believe Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is a Democrat?
Not from the positions he's been taking, no.
Assess Cornel West. Do you have any anxiety about him running as a Green Party candidate?
I do. Anybody who wants to turn the page and go to the future in this country should be worried about Cornel West's candidacy. Any third party entrance that would take votes from whoever is going to take on the likely nominee from the GOP, and that's probably Donald Trump. So I would ask Mr. West, I would ask others who are contemplating third party runs to please think about your legacy, think about the future, and consolidate around entering a Democratic primary, because that's why we have primaries.
I'm confused, Congressman. If there's a conversation that you say needs to occur within the Democratic Party about an alternative to the sitting president of the United States, why isn't the leading contender for that the sitting vice president of the United States, Kamala Harris?
I think we live in an era of fear. What if I get out of line? What if I take on my party? I know the feeling this week.
Is she not qualified?
I think she's absolutely qualified. In fact, I think she's misportrayed. I think everybody in this country should take a little bit of time and sit with people, observe them, know them before you draw conclusions. I think she is more competent and able than many people give her credit for. The job of the vice president is not an easy one.
Wow. That is Dean Phillips. He's a congressman out of Minnesota, and he is 54 years young. And he's already hinting that he wants to run for president, but maybe not right now. Mm-hmm. We're back here on the Y'all Show talking with Megan. I'm John, and we want to dissect what we just heard here. Megan, what'd you think?
I was cracking up with the Kamala statement, saying that Kamala is competent. And if you just sit down and observe a little bit, if you observe Kamala Harris, it sounds like a five-year-old wrote her speeches, because who doesn't love a yellow bus, right?
Yeah.
Or she sounds, when she speaks, like a college student trying to reach the word count of a 3,000-word page paper before
Ooh.
Midnight.
Ooh.
Ukraine is a country. Ukraine is a small country. You know, she's not competent. And that's why they put her as VP, because she's the alternative to Joe Biden. Nobody wants her either.
Mm-hmm. Megan Headwall, everybody. And so, yeah, Dean Phillips talking about the vice president, while she's not being strongly considered to be a contender for president in 2024 on the Democratic side.
Thankfully.
But what about Joe Biden? What did Dean Phillips just tell us there that was alarming to you?
It's just that he wants more people running. It sounds like, even though he says, oh, Joe Biden's great, and even in another interview talking about, you know, how he's full of competency and decency and all this, it sounds like maybe him wanting someone else, he doesn't have complete faith in Joe Biden.
Well, I just saw the headline today. Today marks the one-year anniversary of Janet Yellen or something doing some kind of inflation reduction deal. I can't tell. I mean, things to me are more expensive than they've ever been.
Right.
And I have to point the finger at the Biden administration.
Yeah.
I have nowhere else to point it. There's no excuse for us to have twice the amount of expense now on many goods, sometimes more than twice the amount than what we're having to pay. Gasoline, over $3 now.
Okay.
It shouldn't be that way. And by the way, did you see the Mike Pence commercial?
No, but I did hear him speak and say that Tucker Carlson was fake news.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Okay, well, evidently Mike Pence has filmed a campaign commercial where he's pumping gas and he doesn't do it correctly or something. I haven't seen the entire commercial, but when you're the vice president, you generally don't have to pump your own gasoline.
I would assume not.
No, assuming not. But let's go back to the donkeys here, talking about the Democrats for 2024. Dean Phillips, let's give him credit. He's talking about this on national television,
yeah,
where most Democrats are towing the party line and pretending that we'll just find a way to prop Joe Biden, whether he's alive or dead, they're going to prop him up just to beat Donald Trump. They got to beat Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, he's not sharing a popular opinion, probably, and he's probably going to get some some heck for that.
Do you have any Democratic friends?
I do.
Do they talk about it with you?
We talk sometimes, but...
Other than me, who else do you talk to? I'm just kidding. So, are they excited about Joe Biden as a president?
Some of them are, and...
They are?
Some of them think that he's doing a great job, and others think, they'd like to see somebody else.
And his great job is what?
I don't know. They talk about, the college relief and free handouts, that kind of thing, which aren't actually free.
Well, he wanted to maybe give college kids free tuition, but that still hasn't happened.
Yeah. Well, it just, you do that and the quality of degree, goes down. Back way back when, a high school diploma was worth something. Now everyone gets one because the government made it free. Then bachelor's, associate's, master's degrees. Now everyone gets an AA. Bachelor's degrees are next up on the chopping block. So if you want to have something worth something, it should be a master's or a doctorate. Because if you keep giving out free stuff, it loses its quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you essentially get rewarded for being a student.
Right.
And getting money. These Pell Grants and stuff are...
Well, and people who went to college and paid their way through it, now they've got to pay for someone else.
Yep.
But...
So that interview that we heard from Dean Phillips was on Face the Nation. Major Garrett doing that interview and holding him to the fire there, asking him about the Kamala Harrises and others. What did you think about his comments about Robert Kennedy Jr. not being a Democrat?
I could see how he would think that because, I haven't really looked into Kennedy too much, but I know he's with the vaccine and stuff. He's not maybe necessarily pushing the complete Democratic narrative, and they might not like that, but he could also be playing a strategic game, just trying to make everyone happy and trying to win people on both sides.
Yeah. So. How about Robert Kennedy being on Fox News Channel more than he's on the CNNs of the world?
Well, Fox News Channel isn't really a conservative channel, is it? So
I don't know. I don't have to watch it.
Yeah.
But I certainly don't want to watch it when I see people like Robert F. Kennedy on almost every show.
Right.
I mean, he really is totally taking over that network. A guy that's supposedly running as a Democrat.
Well,
and I'm not saying that they'd have to not have him on there, but right. Every show?
Well,
I mean, he's on there more than Trump.
Maybe he's trying to...
Being interviewed, at least.
Yeah, so he gets his ideas out there and maybe wins over some Republicans.
So Dean Phillips, if you don't know much about him, he is the child of a GI killed in the Vietnam War. His dad was killed when Phillips was only 6 months old. And this guy grew up kind of in a privileged lifestyle. He's the heir to the Phillips Distilling Company. And that's because his mother... married a guy named Eddie Phillips after his dad, Artie Pfeiffer, was killed in the Vietnam War. And Representative Phillips, who was born Dean Benson Pfeiffer, as we said, his dad killed in the Vietnam War, is the grandson of a lady that most of us knew growing up. Growing up, we watched our newspaper get delivered and we pulled out the newspaper each and every day and read a little column written by Dean's grandmama, Pauline Phillips, also known as Abigail Van Buren. Dear Abby, that was this congressman's grandma. Abby was his grandma. Dear Abby was a newspaper column that debuted back in 1956, and at one time it was the most widely syndicated newspaper column in the world, in over 1,400 newspapers with 110 million readers. Dear Abby, do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
No.
It was an advice column. Mm-hmm. And so people, even myself as a youngster, would go check out my local paper to see what people were asking Abigail Van Buren about. And that was this congressman's grandma. So maybe grandma from the grave is telling him, you need to give some advice to the country. They may want to have a different Democratic nominee for president in 2024. So do you think this guy, Dean Phillips, Dear Abby's grandson, is he making a difference by going out on these talking shows and talking about, hey, we need to look at another option?
I don't know. sometimes it just falls on deaf ears. But
I've seen him interviewed now on Face the Nation. He was on Jake Tapper on CNN. Mm-hmm. He's going to become a popular guy for interviews, at least, because this is a subject matter that's not really been talked about.
Right. Which can be a good thing, but it could also, you know, he could also get some pushback from it from his own party.
He's Dear Abby's grandson. He doesn't.
He's not afraid of pushback.
No, he's going to give them advice. Let me give you a piece of advice, expert advice. Yes, so Dean Phillips is out beating this drum that we should look at possibilities. Now, I will say, I love people who are rebellious, and this guy is a little bit rebellious by breaking with the norms of the Democratic Party by bringing this subject up. But he also says in most of his interviews as he's rapping, well, we still got to do whatever we can to keep Donald Trump from another 4 years in the White House.
Yeah.
So don't think that this guy's trying to help Trump out. He's all about Democratic win in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
Your other observations?
Just later in that interview, that he was asked, what is the Vietnam of our time?
And oh, yeah, I love that part.
Yeah, and he said, the Vietnam of our time is turning the page to the future. What does that even mean? And he said, elect people with competence and good character. Well, you're not going to get that from the Democratic Party. So I don't know what he's talking about.
Well, the Vietnam, what he's referencing, and again, this guy, Dean Phillips' father, was killed when
right.
he was just a couple of months old. That thing took up the energy of the 1960s from all sides, so much so that the current president in 1968, LBJ, said, I'm not running for another term of office, even though he could have.
Mm-hmm.
He chose to not run. And so what Dean Phillips is referencing is that all of this chaos and their belief on the Democratic side that President Donald J. Trump is a threat to democracy and the survival of the country
mm-hmm.
is our current Vietnam.
Yeah, well, it's always the pot calling the kettle.
Which I think is a bit of an insult to the more than 50,000 Americans, including Dean Phillips' own dad, who died over there in Southeast Asia fighting in the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
This is not an actual guns and bloodshed war going on. It's more of a political war.
Well, not yet. It's not.
But no, it's not.
Turn into it.
No, where did I see somebody? Who said that? Somebody in the last day said something about this country wouldn't be until there was a conflict, armed conflict or something. Somebody said it. I'm sorry, I didn't pay enough attention. Could have been my mom. I don't know. Somebody did. I read it somewhere. Doing this show, Megan, I have stuff coming to me from all kinds of directions.
We hear things.
And that one wasn't worth bringing up at the time, but now I wish I would have made more of a little bit of a note to myself to bring that up, because somebody did reference that we might just have to have conflict to fix the country.
Well, I think
it's... Was that you? Are you the one that said that?
I don't know. I've said it just now, but we might. I mean, you know, what's that saying? Hard times create strong men create good times create weak men, and I think we're at the end of a cycle right now with a bunch of weak men, so I think we're about to face some hard times.
We need weak women.
No, we need strong men and strong women.
Are you okay with a woman president?
I would be, but I don't know.
Do you think there's going to be a Republican VP? Definitely. Is that certain that it's going to be a woman?
I don't know, and I don't really care. We talked about this a couple shows ago, you know.
Did we?
Yeah, we talked about... I said, the thing that frustrates me about Americans and voters is that they're more focused on your gender or how much pigment's in your skin instead of qualifications and values. And it just frustrates me because it's just a popularity contest, and then you wonder why you're upset because you voted for the way someone looked, not for what they actually stood for.
Which is, I think, part of the reason we've got Kamala Harris as vice president.
Right. She's a woman. She's a minority. You know, it's all this stuff, and I don't know. It's just, it's frustrating. I mean, people would tell me that even running for county mayor. Oh, it'd be nice to have a woman as a mayor, you know, a county mayor that'd be the first one, or, oh, you look good, we're going to vote for you. I'm like, you don't even know what I believe or what I stand for. Like, that's so stupid to say that.
You mean somebody told you that you look good?
Plenty of people were like, you're kind of pretty, I'm going to vote for you. I'm like, that has nothing to do with the position. It's so irritating. Listen to my values, my ideas, where I want to lead, you know, and that's what we should be looking for in our political leaders, not how they look or their appearance, but where are they trying to take us and what are they saying, and do their actions match their words?
Now, you ran for a local office.
Yeah.
And you ran as a party, as part of a good old Republican or Democratic primary. You ran in that.
Yes, I did.
So what was it like going up to people who were historically not Republicans and trying to get them to vote for a Republican?
Well, I mean, it was a conversation. If they tell me, no, I don't want to hear it, I'm a Democrat or I'm not voting for a Republican, okay. But the conversations and the people that I got to meet that I wouldn't have otherwise met, my biggest thing was that I told everyone is, you're never going to find someone in life that you agree 100% on anything, whether it's religion or politics. You're just not. We're all different. We all have come from different places. But as long as we can have mutual respect for each other when we talk and be willing to hear each other's ideas out, there's no telling where we can move our county forward to. And I think just people, what people want is to be heard and feel like their ideas and their opinions matter. That is what they want. And so if you're willing to hear them out, at least, even though you might not be able to do something for them or agree with them, just the fact that you're willing to take the time, that's what matters.
Yeah. Talking with Megan Hedwall here on the Y'all Show, our sometimes co-hosts. We would like to get you here more often, maybe 24 hours a day, perhaps. Uh-oh. Is in your future.
Nobody wants to hear that.
No, I think I would. I would. But we're talking a little politics today. Do you think this Dean Phillips bringing this whole Biden issue out in the open, is that going to create a little bit of an opening that the dam might break and there'll be more people coming from out of the woodwork saying, yeah, we do need to have more formidable people running for office?
It might. It might encourage some people to stand up. I am glad when he had his little call to action, like somebody needs to jump in there, that he did say that maybe not now for me, but in the future, because I think a lot of times it's so easy to sit around and complain about something, but it's a whole different thing to get up off your butt and do something about it. And running for office, no matter what level it is, it takes time and energy, and it can be stressful, and it's not always fun. And I think people realize that, but like I said, it's easier to complain than do something.
And Dean Phillips is in his early 50s. Megan, you ran for mayor, and you were elected at what age?
24.
You were elected at 24, so you're talking about people getting off their butt. Sometimes you can be a youngster and get off your butt and do something. I'm sure people said, Megan, you don't need to run for mayor. You're too young.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. You know, looking back on it and reflecting, my advice to any young person looking to get involved in politics is, don't do it. Wait until your late 30s, early 40s to do it, because when you are so young, while some people admire it that you're willing to stand up and do something, the majority of people that I encountered, it was just, well, you're too young, what do you know? Which, that's a valid point, you know, not having a whole lot of life experience, but where my values were at, the foundation is what's important. But they couldn't look past the age to see my foundation and my values. So if I were to run again, I think I'd wait a couple years till I'm a little bit older, mm-hmm. and that way maybe be taken a little bit more seriously.
So. Well, you know, you can be president at age 35.
I don't know if I'd want that job.
I think you'd be great.
By that
especially
time,
as a Democrat.
Oh, my gosh. I can't. Never mind. I'm not going to say that on air.
Hedwall Phillips, 2020.
Oh, gosh.
2030 no. Something, whatever year it would be.
No.
Oh, come on now. Megan, it's always great to talk to a little politics with you. And yeah. Again, you answered the call. You did run and you won as your
Twice.
Town's yeah. mayor. And, you know, even though Megan's against it, if you're out there and you got that call, give it a shot.
Yeah.
Give it a shot. You're probably not going to win, but you might win.
Well, if you win and you find that they take you seriously, call in and correct me.
Yes.
That's just my experience.
But somebody's got to run.
Yeah.
And that's kind of maybe what Dean Phillips is out here today saying, look, we got to do something on this Democratic side because we cannot have Donald J. Trump, oh my God, get back in office. And the rest of the South is like, yeah, we probably could have him back in office. Yeah, I think so. It's not really a bad idea. Dean Phillips, again, is your Minnesota congressman. I don't know of any Democrats in the South that are out, even that are even capable of challenging the status quo on the Democratic side. I wish we had some. Well, I'm not aware of any.
No, but I did hear him mention, you know, Gavin Newsom out of California, and that wouldn't be good either.
But he's still going to be for Joe Biden, don't you think? Do you think he's going to get in the race?
I don't know. I know people have been talking about it. There's been murmurs, but...
Are you one of his former love interests? You know, he's got a few.
No.
And by the way, people should not have said, Megan, you're too young. Or what did they... And I talked about looks. Like, you look good. Didn't they tell you that?
They might... Some of those other guys might be too old.
Oh, that's true. That's true. But they should have told you, Megan, you're not too good looking. You're too great looking is what they should have said for political office, maybe. That's what they should have said. All right. Well, thank you, Dean Phillips, for giving us something to talk about on today's Y'all Show. When we come back, we're going to talk about them Hokies. Do you know what a Hokie is?
Nope, but I know you're going to tell me.
I'm going to tell you when we come back. It's our spotlight on the Virginia Tech Hokies as we're getting you ready for the start of college football in just a matter of days. All that is right ahead on the show that shakes the Southland. Strike up that band, Virginia Tech, because you're just weeks away from the start of the 2023 season. The Hokies at Lane Stadium get the season underway against the Monarchs of Old Dominion on Saturday, September 2nd. That's going to be a prime time game there when Enter Sandman is played there at Lane Stadium. We're closing out this Y'all Show Monday edition with a look at Virginia Tech football and the traditions of Virginia Tech. John and Megan on our tour across the Southeast, featuring different schools as we go along the way. The Hokies 23 season with Old Dominion gets things going. Then they're going to be playing Purdue as Purdue comes in out of the Big Ten for a game on the second week of the season. Then they'll be on the road at Rutgers in week three. The Thundering Herd of Marshall is the opponent, and the Hokies head over to Huntington for that game. And then ACC play begins against Pitt on the 30th of September. FSU is the opponent in Tallahassee October 7th. Then the Wake Forest Demon Deeks come up for a game October 14th. Syracuse is the opponent October 26th. It's at Louisville November 4th. Boston College is the opponent in Chestnut Hill November 11th. Then they wind the season down with games at home against NC State and then on the road at UVA on November 25th. That game last year, that rivalry game, was canceled because of the tragedy within the UVA football program at the conclusion of 2022. Brent Pry is getting ready to enter another season as he will be entering year number two as Virginia Tech's head coach. The Altoona, Pennsylvania native is 53 years young, and we actually found a brand new interview that was just done with Coach Pry and Coach Frank Beamer, the legendary Virginia Tech coach, as they were interviewed by the ACC Network. And we're going to go hear them talk about one of the great traditions at Virginia Tech. It's the lunch pail. It's what they give those guys that bring it on defense and more. And it truly has become a great tradition at VPI. And here is Coach Pry, and maybe you'll hear some commentary from Beamer as well, talking about the lunch pail tradition at Virginia Tech.
Came with Bud, and I think you were here at
the
time.
1995.
And kids putting their goal in there, and it was a sacred thing between Bud Foster and the defense here, and kind of a oath to each other that you're just going to get the job done. And it's lived a long time. That lunch pail's beat up and battered. And it's traveled more miles than any of us, but it's hung in there.
Coach, what about that?
You remember that '95?
I remember that meeting down in the classroom. Down in the classroom downstairs. And I still get the hair stands up on the back of my neck thinking about it. You know, Coach Foster did a tremendous job up in front of the unit talking about what he wanted this to mean. And the guys took it to heart. You know, we wrote down our individual goals, our unit goals, our team goals, and one by one, walked up and put it in that lunch pail. And it went with us everywhere. And I'm going to tell you, it took a beating on that sideline at times now. I mean, whether it was Todd Grantham or Bud or a player, I mean, that thing would, you know, took the brunt of some of it. But let me tell you now, it means a lot. You talk to the guys on this staff that played here under Coach and under Bud, that thing still just, I mean, it had a giant impact on their career here.
All right, that was Brent Pry and Frank Beamer talking in an interview with the ACC Network about the lunch pail, one of the great traditions of Virginia Tech football. By the way, that lunch pail got a lot of beaten up in 2022. Last year, Virginia Tech, for the first time since 1951, Coach Pry, his program, had a seven-game losing streak and ended up not bowling or anything like that. And then that Virginia game, their rivalry game, was canceled because of that tragedy at UVA. So any kind of improvement this year would be much, much appreciated for Hokie fans as they're getting ready for this year of the ACC where they don't have divisions. It's all kind of mixed in, and the top two find themselves going to Charlotte for the ACC championship game. Let's tell you a little bit about some of the traditions at Virginia Tech. First of all, Megan, they got the Hokie cheer. Are you ready for this one?
I'm ready.
All right. It's Hokie, Hokie, Hokie High, Tex, Tex, VPI, Solar Rex, Solar Ra, Polytex, Virginia, Ra, Ra, VPI. How did I do?
That was good. I think, considering I haven't heard it, I'm going to assume it was good.
They have their own little Hokie. They've got Hokie Bird as their tradition. We just let you hear all about the lunch pail at Virginia Tech. The game ball run is a tradition. They also have the Commonwealth Clash. That's that game against Virginia that they do. One of the things that Virginia Tech's known for is they're one of the six senior military colleges in America, alongside schools like Virginia Military Institute. Virginia Tech has its own Corps of Cadets, so the Corps is a big part of Virginia Tech's tradition, and you can see that on display at a Virginia Tech game. Of course, the Hokie, the name comes from that Hokie cheer, and then they have the turkey as a mascot. I don't know. That's just the way it is there at Virginia Tech. But we are happy to tell you all about Virginia Tech as they get ready again for Old Dominion. That's the first opponent on the 2023 schedule. One quick note out of the ACC, another Tech in the news. Georgia Tech has renamed their stadium there, Bobby Dodd Stadium at Hyundai Field, the home of the Yellow Jackets. So that's our breaking news out of the ACC today. We will see you back here on Tuesday. Thank you, Megan. We'll see you on Wednesday. Yep. This is the Y'all Show. Thanks for listening.